So how y'all living? How you all living? What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome, and this talk show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So I ask you yet again, how you living? What's going on? How are things? Good, good show for you today. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. You also know it's toll free. You also know that all you need to do is pick up the phone, lob me a phone call, have a strong take, tell that take to our EP, Adam Hawk. He'll put you on hold. You get on the air. You build your brand. You make a difference. You have a way to get off. This process is flawless. All right, coming up next segment, good friend of the program, JLC, Jason Lockenfora. Middle of the program is open right now. Last segment today belongs to Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman. So we are going to front load and back load. JLC coming up next segment. Middle of the show is wide open. Julian Edelman coming up in the third hour. We are efforting a third guest right now. You've got your phone number. You know to find me also on Twitter, at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. And there you go. All right, let me start with some NBA today. As Woj reported yesterday, the Houston Rockets are interested in getting a hold of Jimmy Butler. And when free agency starts on Sunday, they will be recruiting him to push for a sign-and-trade with Philadelphia. Now, normally, a 53-win team with a perennial MVP candidate looking to add another all-NBA caliber player would qualify as a Woj bomb. Except in this case, it's more like a, I don't know, a Woj grenade. No reflection whatsoever on Woj. It's a reflection on the fact that the Rockets really wanted to get this guy last year. The fact that Daryl Morey is their general manager. The fact that Daryl Morey is a wizard. Now, I know what you're thinking already. The Rockets, they can't get that done. How the hell would they get a guy like that under their salary cap? How can they do this? My answer is Daryl Morey. I repeat, this guy is a wizard. He really is. I mean, there are a lot of good general managers, and then you've got a few warlocks. He's one of them. If there is a way to pull something like this off, he will find it. Don't sweat the salary cap. That's the least of my concerns. He'll figure it out. He always does. That's what makes that guy that guy. Well, one more thing. The other thing that makes that guy is he's competitive as hell. He could have done what other GMs did when the Warriors got Kevin Durant. Looked at Golden State's roster and said, you know what? We can't hang. We can't compete with that. We'll wait it out. We'll wait till they age out. We'll wait till they get hurt. We'll just wait because we know we can't go at these guys. Not Morey. He went out and he got Chris Paul. Fight fire with fire. He's not looking to wait anybody out. He wants a championship, and he's willing to do absolutely everything in his power to get it. And then there's the idea of Butler with the Rockets. I mean, sure, look at the analytics. Look at it on paper. But then look at it in that locker room. Look at it on the floor. Butler with the Rockets. I, for one, could not love that possibility any more than I do. And I love it in stages. For instance, I love the audacity of the idea. I love the fact that they're looking at the Western Conference right now and they see it's wide open. They're not content to just run it back. Again, that's not what Morey does. They're not content to run it back. They want to go for the jugular. Most teams would say, we won 53 games this year. We won 65 the year before. Man, ride this thing out. Stick it out. Keep the same roster. Maintain continuity. Consistency. Maybe you make a tweak or two and see if we can chip away. Not Daryl Morey. Not the Rockets. They're looking to bust through that wall Kool-Aid Man style.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's get Jimmy Butler. Oh, yeah. Man, you think this guy, Morey, is seeing injuries to Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and thinking, we got this? Hell no. He's seeing those injuries and he's looking to wrap his hands around their throat and choke them out. Oh, yeah. Golden State. Golden State's going to be without a couple of all-stars for most of the season, if not longer, if Durant leaves. Yeah, cool. We'll just go get our own all-star. We're not worried about dealing with them. They have to deal with us. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And if they get Butler, If they get Butler, that'd be so amazing. I can't lie. If they get Butler, I'm going to be thinking, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. You know why? Because it's amazing if it works, and it's even better if it doesn't. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's risk here, right? Risk of chemistry issues. That's what makes it so awesome. And by chemistry issues, I mean something that is completely explosive. It's not like there aren't already big locker room issues with Chris Paul and James Harden, reportedly. But then you throw Jimmy Butler, who has a bit of history with that as well, into that same mix. And then you've got one of the best chemistry experiments ever. Shake up all those chemicals and see what happens. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if it does work, it's amazing. Especially if Daryl Morey is able to keep P.J. Tucker in the process. Then you add another monster perimeter defender next to Tucker and a guy who can give you 20 and 5. I'll take that. Even if Golden State keeps KD and Klay and they get healthy, Houston would still have an awesome lineup. Even more so when Golden State is vulnerable and the rest of the West is there for the taking. Everybody else in the West thinks they can win if Golden State's down. But if Houston gets Butler, they're obviously the team to beat. And even if they don't get Butler, they might still be the team to beat. And if they do get him and it doesn't work, it will be the best show ever. Because there is no way a team with Harden, Paul, and Butler doesn't get it done and then doesn't implode. As always, give me an A or give me an F. Nobody cares about a C. And if it doesn't work, the three of them will probably end up standing in center court, giving each other the hands, and throwing haymakers. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There is one catch. One catch that could wreck this whole thing. We know what Daryl Morey wants. We don't know what Jimmy Butler wants. He may not want to be in Houston. He may want to stay in Philadelphia. Maybe he likes the role he has there as a veteran leader. It sure seems like he and Joel hit it off. And I would definitely miss their two-man pressers if he did come to Houston. And I know Joe well. I know the Sixers are going to do everything they can to keep him. Only way they don't keep Butler is if he goes to them and he says, hey, listen, I don't want to be here. I want to be in Houston. So rather than losing me for nothing and getting nothing, put together a sign and trade. That said, I don't know if that's what he wants. I just know what I want. I want to see how this looks if it works. And more importantly, I want to see how this looks if it doesn't work. Awesome if they kill it. More awesome if they don't. And they try to kill each other. In other words, Daryl, make it happen. If anybody can, it's you. And if Butler doesn't want it to happen, it's up to you to convince him that he should want it to happen. I'm already on board. Now make sure that Butler is, Daryl. Do not let us down. Don't let us down. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Man, Daryl Morey's something else. He is absolutely awesome. To say this guy is just some kind of like icon and legend of the analytics game is to sell him way too short. Of course he wants Jimmy Butler. Of course he thinks he can get it done. Get a third team involved. Make sure that's what Butler wants. Bring this guy to H-Town and let's see how it works out. 1-800-636-8686. And can I not get an oh yeah from you clones?
Oh yeah!
I'm not going to beg for it either. All right then, we just added a guest. A's third baseman, Matt Chapman, joining me in hour number one. So JLC next segment, Matt Chapman after that. Julian Edelman in the third hour. At Table Slam Fan. He answered my question. I sit off the very top. How y'all living? How are you living, clones? Table Slam Fan tweets, how am I living? On a prayer, Jim. Thanks, Bon Jovi. Hey, we're not doing this again today, all right? We've already done this show. We've already emptied the Bon Jovi library before. We have already emptied the Bon Jovi library before. We're not doing it again. I'm not doing it again. I'm not one of those guys who's lazy, who takes some bit, beats it into the ground. We're not doing this again. You know why? To do that again would just be, I don't know. How do I put this? Bad medicine? No, we're not doing that again. We're not doing this again. You know why? The people that I answer to with CBS, if I were to do this again, a second time, they'd want me dead or alive. They don't want that. I don't want that. We're not doing this again. We're not doing this again today. We've emptied the Bon Jovi library before. Got it? Got it? You got it? You give this show or love a bad name,
shut
all of you. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So lazy. So lazy. It's so lazy, and I'm not doing it. Because even if I get knocked down, I'll bounce back. Look what you started, Jake in Buffalo. Look what you started, Jake in Buffalo. You started it, and I'm going to finish it. Let me tell you something. It's my show, and it's my life. You got that, Jake?
It's my life. It's now or never.
Good, Jake. You may have started this, Jake, but I'm finishing it right now. So you, my friend, have a nice day.
Have a nice day.
Now I'm done. Oh, yeah. At SA Sports Honk tweets, Rome, can you tell me how the show ended yesterday? I missed the last 5 minutes because my speakers were blown. Heading to Speaker City to get new ones. Hashtag Josh in Detroit.
Because my smack hit so hard, I don't want to blow their car speakers out with my fire, Rome.
Straight fire, Josh. I was trying to give out the first golden ticket for Smack Off 26. That's when Josh in Detroit called in to try to claim it as his own. And he said his smack was so hot that when people listening had the bass turned up on their speakers, it would blow their speakers right out. As you might imagine, he did not secure a golden ticket. All right, quickly, other things to get to. Episode 87 of the Jim Rome Podcast is live right now with the iconic broadcasting legend, Bob Costas. What a great, great effort by Bob Costas. I've got that for you. An update on the LA Lakers, who for some reason think that they've got a shot at Kawhi Leonard. That's funny. That's really funny. Sure they don't. Stick around this game long enough, this business long enough, and you'll say things that you never imagined you'd have to say. Stay the hell off the field. Stop trying to hug Cody Bellinger. There, I said it. I've got a take on that, too. Reds did not have a very good night last night. All that's still ahead. And when we come back, NFL insider Jason Lockenfora. You know, it's awesome. Summertime is here. The sun is out. Temps are heating up, which means it is finally time to grill. The grilling season is here. Eat like the party never ends with Kingsford. Grill burgers, chicken, corn, brats, ribs, all kinds of amazing food with that mouth-watering, dyed-and-gone-to-heaven flavor that you can only get from Kingsford. Pick up a bag of Kingsford charcoal at your local retailer. Start something big. Remember, it's not a party if you're not eating good. And you're not eating good unless you're eating food good with Kingsford.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Once again, back-to-back interviews in hour number one, starting with this. A man with an amazing resume, but as you might recall, at the Super Bowl, he requested that he simply be introduced as the man who will forever have the title of first guest on the CBS Sports Network simulcast. That said, he's also an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today on CBS. He is the host of Be More Opinionated podcast. Jason Lockenfora, back in the jungle. Jason, what's up? How are you?
What's going on, Romy?
My man, good to have you back. So, JLC, this week you were in Atlanta for the NFL's Quarterback Coaching Summit. Before we get into the details of it, exactly what is the summit and what was the thinking behind it?
Well, I mean, obviously there is a dearth of African-American or Latino coaches in the NFL at a head coaching level. I think we're down to just four now. People of color as head coaches, just a couple of offensive coordinators, and just a couple of general managers. And the numbers have been trending sort of in the opposite direction of what you would expect, you know, in 2019. So different people have been trying to sort of get at this issue in different ways. And in recent years, it's been fairly obvious that owners are looking for that next Kyle Shanahan, that next Adam Gase, that next Sean McVay. So they've been going through certain sort of networks and pipelines of coaches who have play calling and quarterback experience. Well, as I said, that there aren't many, hardly any, African-American play callers and sort of quarterback gurus on that side of the ball. Not that they don't exist, just that they haven't been given a chance at the NFL level. And so this was sort of one attempt to try to identify, develop, cultivate, help network, and sort of get this group more exposure for this group of men who are doing that sort of job at the pro level, at the college level, you know, sort of across the board. So Doug Williams and Shaq Harris, former Grambling quarterbacks, former NFL quarterbacks, longtime personnel men, started working on this last year through the Black College Hall of Fame. The NFL got more involved this year, and for 2 days, basically it was an opportunity for this group of around 30 or so younger coaches, less experienced coaches, to be around general managers, to be around head coaches, to learn from them through symposiums. Jim Caldwell basically gave these guys a 300-page document. You know, like, this is how I prepare for a head coaching interview. Like, literally gave it to them. Like, guys were literally giving plays and basically giving playbooks to these guys to try to make them as best prepared as possible for if and when these opportunities arise. But ultimately, it's the decision makers, general managers, owners, a group of men who are, frankly, decidedly white, who are the gatekeepers. And there is some thought as well that until the constitution of the gatekeepers changes, then maybe we won't reach a point where the coaching sidelines and the GM boxes are representative of what we see in the locker rooms in terms of the demographics.
It's a really good idea. We'll see what results from that. Jason Lockenfor is joining us. Now, that's one of the issues which is impacting the entire league, and then there are issues which impact individual teams. In a piece that you wrote for CBSSports.com, you talk about the Patriots and their offseason. Given everything that's happened and all the changes, including the retirement of Rob Gronkowski, the departure of Brian Flores, are they going to just keep rolling, or is this the year that it finally catches up with them?
I can't bet against them yet. Brady's still there. Belichick's still there. Robert Kraft is still overseeing the day-to-day duties as the owner. Now, maybe he won't be doing that for all 16 games. We'll see what, you know, what comes of the NFL's investigation into his off-field matters. I think the division's better, Jim, but I can't vouch for anybody else until, you know, somebody's got to at least start to run before I say that they could sprint for 16 weeks and keep something close to pace with the Patriots. But I think they'll do it differently. I think the equation that we saw down the stretch, which was a lot of unbalanced lines, a lot of heavy jumbo packages, a lot of running the ball down people's throats to eventually be able to pass it, keeping Tom Brady to 25, 35-ish attempts per game. I think that's probably who they are, who they'll continue to be. Will it be as effective without Gronk being that dominant tight end inline blocker? I don't know. But I still think they'll find a way to win more weeks than not.
Jason Lockenfor joining us. They always do, right? Now, what about the Steelers? They have undergone a makeover this offseason. You have the departure of Antonio Brown. You have the official departure of Le'Veon Bell. How do you think Pittsburgh shows up this year? And then as a follow-up, JLC, how significant is this season for Mike Tomlin?
Yeah, I think this is a very different feeling, and as we head to, you know, deeper into the summer in Pittsburgh, and they'll start their their season in Latrobe at training camp as they always do. It is a little different. You know, there is some uncertainty in the air. There are some guys who you could pencil in combined for 3,000 plus yards from scrimmage and probably 25 touchdowns. Just, you know, if they're healthy at the start of every season. in Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, who aren't there anymore. You've got Ben thrust even into a bigger light in terms of leadership, how he handles a locker room, how he conducts himself, how he comports with teammates, interpersonal dynamics, chemistry. You know, all that's under question, and certainly this team has frayed the last 2 years. There's no two ways about it, and Mike Tomlin is under more pressure than he's been since he established himself as a head coach in Pittsburgh, over a decade ago. So I don't know what that's going to bring out in them. I don't know how that's going to shake out. I think it's a pretty tough division. You know, I think Baltimore, it's not sexy, but it's pretty effective, and I don't think they're going to reinvent the wheel with Lamar. I think they won 6 or 7 games last year doing certain things that are going to remain their hallmarks, and I think the Cleveland Browns on paper are for real. So I don't know, Jim. I'm sort of worried about the Steelers a little bit, to be honest with you. I think they'll still be a good team. They're always a good team. I'm not sure they'll be a great team.
Jason, looking forward to joining us for a few more moments. All right, then, what about Dallas? As long as we're talking about significant seasons, the Cowboys have got some decisions to make when it comes to contracts, Jason, for Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, and Amari Cooper. Do you think that Jerry Jones is willing to give them all what they want, or is he going to try and play some hardball?
Well, I think some of their demands are probably viewed in the marketplace as a little extreme. Now, Jerry has had a tendency in the past to overpay guys at times who he sort of falls in love with or who he really wants to succeed. And let's face it, they want that Dak Prescott pick to look like a franchise-changing sage move. And he's been a very effective quarterback. I don't know that he's an upper echelon of quarterback. I don't know that he extrapolates to being truly an upper-level quarterback, but his demands are upper-level. Ezekiel Elliott is sort of the straw that stirs the drink on offense, but, you know, look at what just happened to Todd Gurley. And, you know, are you going to pay him before you absolutely have to, given the off-field stuff and just given the nature of that position and how guys are churned up and spit out? You know, and Amari Cooper, you've got this 6-game stretch where he looks like, you know, Randy Moss, and you've got the rest of his career where he's looked more like a Robin to somebody else's Batman. So none of them are easy. And look, Byron Jones might be as important as any of those guys, given that I think defense will have to be their calling card. You know, and he's banged up right now, and he doesn't have a long-term contract. So I don't think the Cowboys even know exactly how this is all going to go. I think it will come down to some of these players blinking as we get into late July and saying, bird in hand now, versus 16-game injury risk. And I believe they'll get a couple of them done when it's all said and done, and they still have that franchise tag moving forward to secure the services of somebody else for one more year. But I don't know that if you gave them a crystal ball, they'd tell you exactly how it's going to sort out.
GLC, one last thought. One more issue the league is looking at and coming to terms with, of course, is gambling. So when the league and individual teams look at legalized sports gambling, what kind of thoughts do they have?
They've got sugar plums dancing in their heads.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of dollar signs, a lot of leprechauns dancing, holding, gold doubloons and the coins overflowing, a pot of gold. It's just a matter of when, you know, really. That's what it is. Those revenue streams are there. The league knows they're there. They have to be judicious about when they dive in full-fledged and when they start having an official real-time statistic of the NFL and an official, you know, bettings parlor of the NFL, and when they start lending their name to all this, because, you know, once there's millions of dollars on the line, you can't say, oh, yeah, that sack, you know, that on Sunday we said belonged to Justin Houston. Yeah, now on Tuesday we're saying that was really, you know, whatever, D Ford's. Like, it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle. So the league is continuing to work on these issues, and they've got committees that are dedicated to it. But make no mistake, the sponsorships are coming. At some point, I think there'll be gambling, you know, betting powers within stadiums. Teams are going to have their own sponsorships. There's going to be league-level sponsorships. What do they do with real-time stats? Do they sell that off to somebody else for billions of dollars so that they have all that proprietary information? Or do they make it available to all these different gambling houses? Or do they keep it for themselves? And you could go to NFL.com and bet on who's going to run the fastest route this week, who's going to throw, you know, who's going to leap the highest to catch a ball, you know, all these sort of different ancillary gambling situations that don't exist now. But let's face it, people will bet on which cockroach gets across the street the fastest, right? I mean, So, yeah, it is an untapped brave new world for them. And if it doesn't happen by the start of this season in full thrust, I certainly expect it would by the start of next.
It's coming. He's an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today on CBS. Host of Be More Opinionated podcast, Jason Lockenfora. JLC, thanks so much. Great to have you back.
Thank you, bud. Have a good one.
You Bye-bye. Too. Jason Lockenfora, CBS colleague. All right. Covered a lot of ground with him. When we come back, we keep moving. A's third baseman Matt Chapman joins me on the other side of this. Middle of the show is open. Julian Edelman coming up at the end of hour number three. Also, my thoughts on the LA Lakers, who seem to think they've got a shot at Kawhi Leonard. Aha, ha, ha, ha.
Aha, ha, ha, ha.
Bob Costas is my guest on the Jim Rome podcast. I want to give a taste of that, too. All of that is coming up, but first, here is your... Welcome back. Let's talk some Oakland A's baseball right now. If you're on hold, hang in there. Phone call is coming up after that. We are joined right now, though, by a third baseman for the Oakland A's. He is a Gold Glove winner, a Fielding Bible Award winner. He was 7th in the AL MVP voting last year, 10th in the AL in home runs this year. A hit and a run in last night's win over St. Louis. He was the 25th pick overall in 2014 out of Cal State Fullerton, the pride of El Toro High School in Lake Forest. If it sounds like I'm hyping his SoCal baseball roots, it's because I am. Oakland is at St. Louis tonight. We are joined by A's third baseman, Matt Chapman. Matt, really nice to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. Appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you, man. I really appreciate it. Let me ask you about last night's game. You were trailing 3-1 going into the fifth, and in that inning, the team went double home run, ground out. You singled, then another single, then a pop out, and then another single, which scored two runs, and then a double after that. So before you know it, you guys were up 7-3. How nice was it to get the bats going and take it to somebody last night the way you did?
It was really nice, especially after an off day coming back and kind of just, putting that nice home stand behind us and being able to turn the page and start off to a good road trip. It was really important. It was cool to see Chad Pinder come in there and hit that two-run homer to give us some momentum to tie it up, and then Marcus followed it up with another homer. And then I think that we showed that we can, also string together some hits and run the bases and find other ways to score runs besides just hitting homers.
We're talking to Matt Chapman. See, that's the thing, right? Like, going into last night, you'd won 6 of 8, but you'd only scored a total of 9 runs in the last 3 games. You know, baseball's a tough game. You know you're going to have stretches like that. But knowing the lineup that you guys have, to you, was it maybe a question of more a matter of when rather than a question of if that you guys would break out offensively the way you did?
Yeah, definitely. Because, we showed it a lot last year, all the homers we hit on the road. We have a lot of guys in our lineup that can swing the bat pretty well. I know when we go to NL teams, we lose the DH, which is tough for us sometimes with Chris Davis. But he came in there and got a nice pinch hit double, and everybody seemed to do their part. And I think, throughout the course of a season, if we just keep staying like that, the bats are going to turn around for sure.
It's third baseman Matt Chapman's joining us. You know, Matt, I look back on your first full season. You won a Gold Glove. You finished 7th in the MVP voting. You led the majors in defensive runs saved. You went to the postseason, and you did all that while dealing with a couple of injuries. I know you're looking ahead, but if I were to get you to look back on last season, what kind of thoughts do you have about last year?
Kind of a roller coaster, going through my first full season, definitely expecting a lot out of myself, but still figuring a lot out. It's definitely like an emotional experience, trying to deal with the highs and lows, and definitely kind of fought through a little injury there. I kind of knew I was going to get some surgery after the season, but it only kept me out of the lineup for like 10 days, I think, or so, or maybe 2 weeks, but it was a lot of fun, and to make it to the postseason with the guys that we had last year, we got a really good group of guys, and, when nobody expected anything out of us, to be able to do what we did was pretty cool.
Matt Chapman joining us. That's the fact. I mean, going into last season, the team had averaged more than 90 losses per season over the past 3 years, but I talked to Bob Melvin in spring training. He knew you guys had something special in you. Then you go out, you win 97 games. I mean, Matt, in the postseason, the experience, it didn't last as long as you had hoped, but what were you able to take away from the experience? In other words, is a postseason game like any other game, or is there really a big, big difference?
There's definitely a big difference. Yes, Yes and no. I mean, it's a big difference from the, you know, the preparation, the things around it, and probably, you know, the feeling inside before the game, and, you know, definitely a little more emphasis on the game. But I felt like once, after my first at bat, I kind of felt like it slowed down a little bit for me. It was just a lot of fun. I wish it wasn't so short-lived. I mean, one game, going into Yankee Stadium was a tough place to play for sure. You know, they had the home field advantage a little bit, and they kind of got jumped out ahead of us. But I think we can look back and be proud at what we accomplished and learn a lot from that game and, you know, how to, you know, maybe chip back a little bit more in a playoff game and kind of bring ourselves down. But I think we learned how to handle those emotions, and that if we get put in that same situation, you know, this season, we'd be ready for it.
We're talking A's baseball, third baseman Matt Chapman joining us here in the jungle. So in the offseason, you had to deal with actually a pair of surgeries. Had to be frustrating. So I'm curious, how do you go about approaching the rehab process from the surgeries while at the same time trying to improve as a player?
Yeah, that was a little tough. I didn't get to do as much this offseason as I wanted to you know, get to improve. So the thumb surgery was right when season ended. I knew it was going to happen. and then I rehabbed that, and everything seemed to be great. But then when I started coming back from that, I was, like, doing push-ups and working out, and my shoulder was hurting. And I remember making a diving play in Yankee Stadium in the playoff game. It was, like, a ball in the sixth hole, and I didn't think I would catch it. And I got to it and popped up and threw it to first, and the guy was, like, just barely safe. But my shoulder was, like, burning. And that was, like, the first time that I had realized that my shoulder was hurting. But I figured it was just, like, adrenaline and, like, diving hard. And it would get better after season just from resting it. But when I came back from that thumb surgery, it didn't get any better. So I had to say something. And then it turned out I had to get surgery. And really wish I said something right away, because then I wouldn't have had to get surgery on my shoulder in December. But got shoulder surgery in December, ended up rehabbing that. And then pretty much right when I got cleared from that shoulder surgery, spring training and season was starting. So it was like I kind of got thrown right back into the fire.
Matt Chapman joining us. It's so true, right? I'm not going to say you take it for granted, but sometimes you take your health for granted, and it's not until you don't have it that you realize how important it is. And then Bob Melvin talked about an at-bat last year against Justin Verlander in late August where you fell behind 0-2. That's when a guy like Verlander gets a hitter to chase and he buries him, but you worked the count to 3-2, then you homered. It really was an amazing at-bat. What do you remember about that at-bat?
Well, I remember him getting pissed at one of the ball calls because it was right there on the corner. He was putting that fastball right on the black, and I got down 0-2, fouled a couple pitches off, and he kept shaking and going back to the heater. And I ended up fouling a pitch off, taking a couple close ones, getting it to 3-2, and he shook again. And I was kind of just selling out to the heater because I figured, you know, he wanted to just – he gets aggressive with that heater, and when he's thrown hard like that, he kind of wants to just blow it by you, I felt like. So I tried to choke up a little bit and get to that heater, and luckily I connected on it. And it's definitely wasn't that bad, I remember, because, I mean, you remember in that bat off a Hall of Famer, great pitcher like that. He's never easy.
Guarantee he remembers it too. He's not going to forget that at bat. Matt Chapman joining us. You know, the story goes, you and another one of my favorite guys, Matt, Alex Bregman, are pretty friendly, and both of you pick each other's brains. Like, what are the types of things you talk about? What's he looking to learn from you? What are you looking to learn from him?
Yeah, I don't really know what he's trying to learn from me, but he says that he asks me questions about defense a lot of times, and I try to help him out, but, I mean, he's got a pretty good idea of what he wants to do. He's such a smart baseball player, and I try to pick his brain about just kind of how he is in the box and what he thinks about in the box and what pitches he hunts. I know our swings are a little different. He's a little more compact than I am, and I think I'm a little bigger, so our swings are a little different. But I try to just see what his approach is, because I feel like when he gets in the batter's box, he knows exactly what he wants to do, and I don't really see him ever out of control very often, and he doesn't strike out very much. So I just like to see what gives him the most success. And then I try to help him with anything I can. Maybe I just make him laugh.
Matt Chapman joining us. You know, I like that. This actually, to be honest, is my favorite part of the conversation, because Nolan Arenado is another one of my favorites, and another guy from El Toro. He said last year that you're probably better than he is now. He also talked about a SoCal style of playing baseball. Matt, I love that part of it, because I'm in an area not far from where you grew up. Both my kids have played travel ball. I can't wait to hear you describe this. How would you describe SoCal's style of baseball?
I would describe it as, you know, in my opinion, it's as good a brand of baseball as there is anywhere. I mean, obviously there's a lot of hard-nosed players that come out of, you know, different states, different countries, but, you know, specifically during that time where I was growing up in Southern California, I would describe it as just hard-nosed, old-school baseball, where I came up, you know, learning how to play the game the right way. You don't show people up. You know, fundamentally sound, definitely defense first, and then just learning how to play the game the right way and play it hard. And I feel like that's something that's always stuck with me. And, you know, when you get a lot of really good players in a certain area growing up together and playing the game the right way and playing hard, good things happen.
Hey, Matt, not only that, but it's amazing to me that I could be like 15 miles from where you were, but whenever we go down to where you were in Lake Forest, we get our clocks cleaned. I mean, there is a different style of baseball down there. What about Arenado? The fact you guys were teammates at El Toro, when that was going down, do you think to yourself, look, we know we're destined for great, great things. I'll see in the major leagues. Like, what was your mindset in high school as a high school player?
No, not that confident for me in high school. In high school, I mean, I knew deep down inside, I knew I was good. And I knew that, you know, maybe I wasn't getting the deserved attention that I, you know, wanted at the time because I didn't get drafted. I didn't get really, really recruited that much out of high school. But I knew how hard I worked, and I knew that, like, deep down inside that I was good enough to have success at the college level, and that I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, and I was going to be good enough to be that. Nolan, I mean, I think everybody in the world knew that he was going to be who he was. He was pretty special to watch in high school. He was just, like, a head and shoulder above everybody. I mean, he was bigger, stronger. He was still growing into his body, but I mean, he just had the tools. He could really hit anything he got to, he caught. But in high school, I was just really, really trying to get better. And when I committed to Cal State Fullerton, I just, I remember some people telling me, you know, you sure you want to go there? There's like good players there and stuff. And like, so I kind of was just motivated to prove everybody wrong and just show everybody that, you know, I deserve to be there and that, you know, I could make it to the major leagues. So I think we had a little bit of a different route, but I don't think I'd be as good of a player as I am now if it wasn't for that.
I'm not sure that anybody who's ever achieved anything great didn't have some sort of chip on their shoulder. I got about a minute left. What about the Fullerton experience? That is a big time program. What was that like to play there?
it was a lot of fun. I mean, I still have some of my best friends today from Fullerton together. I mean, it's definitely a tight knit group. It's like a little brotherhood going on there. I mean, they teach you how to play the game the right way. When you go to Fullerton, you'll come out with a very good baseball IQ. I learned a lot of stuff about the mental game of baseball there, just how to be in control of yourself and control your at-bats and, you know, situational hitting, situational defense, what to know what to do with the ball, base running. So I feel like I took my game to the next level when I went to Fullerton for sure. And definitely, that's a place that you can't be soft and have success. You got to be tough to come out of Fullerton.
A pro's pro, once again, the pride of El Toro High School in Lake Forest. Did play his college ball at Cal State Fullerton, the 25th pick overall. And I'm here to talk SoCal baseball. Matt, you crushed it. Great job. Really nice to have you on the show. And let's be sure we do it again soon. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks, Jim. I really appreciate you having me.
You too, Matt. Great job. Really well done. You know, for a guy who was not highly recruited out of high school, he's had an amazing run and off to a great, great start in his career. SoCal baseball, yo. Put some respect on it. El Toro High School, Cal State Fullerton. I love it. All right, when we come back, open phone. Speaking of SoCal, the Lakers really seem to think they've got a shot at Kawhi Leonard. I'll give you my thoughts on their thoughts when we come back.